Good evening. This is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My returning guest tonight, it's always a pleasure to talk to him, is nature photographer Dale Manette. And we're talking about his new book and collection of his photographs, Genius of the Swamp, The Great Blue Heron. Dale, welcome back to the show. It's such a pleasure to talk to you.
Hi, Mark. Thanks for inviting me back.
Now, I have to ask you right off the bat, because this is a beautiful collection of photographs. And I want to mention, it's not just your photographs. It's all your writing about what the photographs are about, too. So you're sort of getting two great things for one book. But why the genius of the swamp? I would think that would be the beaver.
Well, I'll tell you who came up with that is our friend Brad Blodgett.
All right. I haven't heard from Brad in a while.
Yeah. I was talking to him about 2.5 years ago.
I love
when
it.
I was formulating the ideas for this book, and I told him to that. And he told me that Thoreau used to call them the genius of the swamps.
Oh, wow.
And I said, Brad, that's what I'm going to call the book.
For people who don't know, Brad is a former state ornithologist and one of the great sort of birding personnel here in central Massachusetts. I always love bumping into Brad. Now, you have made the great blue heron. It's sort of like if there was a symbol for Dale Manette, it would be the great blue heron. What was your first photograph of great blue herons?
It had to be about, I'm going to say, maybe 10 years ago. I've always had an interest in great blue herons. I loved seeing them fly, and I loved it that I could never get close to them. But when I really got serious about photography and my retirement was impending, I started getting serious about photography, and I started running into them, and, you know, like I've said before, patience.
Yeah.
And I'd go in and sit down in a swamp on the shore and wait, and sure enough, usually one would come flying by. And the more I watched them, the more I got intrigued with them. You know, it's said that they mate for life, and they're great parents, and just really interesting birds. And there's nothing that I like more than to be in a pond or a swamp that has herons early in the morning when they're coming back in for like a nest change, and they you look up and you see these giant birds just flying around, and you can almost see the dinosaur.
People don't realize this, I think a great blue heron rookery is one of the great nature spectacles in our state. They're a colonial nester. They make rookeries, so you can see sometimes just two or three, or sometimes a lot of nests in one spot. The nests are huge. What are the nests made out of?
They're just sticks. And you know, I have to go back on what I told you. My first heron photography. I take everything I said back about that because I'm sitting here and I'm looking at. I have my book up on the screen, and Bill Byrne told me of a rookery in Phillipston in 1982, and I had a small Nikon with a 200mm lens, and I went in looking for it, and I found it, and there were 52 nests.
It was
like I felt like I had gone into the Amazon jungle, and I have a picture of that rookery in this book, but there's only 12 or 14 nests in the photograph that I have up there, but
amazing. Now, just to ask you a technical question, which photographers always wanting to know, what are you shooting?
I have a Nikon, one of the newer cameras called the Z9. Mm-hmm. And the shutter is electronic, so there's no noise. There's no clunk, 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 clunk when you press down on the shutter. And it's just, to me, it's wonderful, because I've been in the woods and I've had otters come swimming by me. And otters and coyotes, their hearing is so sharp.
Yeah,
that
I know.
They hear the clunk and away they go. But with this, I had an otter haul out of the water one day, probably 30 feet from me. And I had the camera on a tripod, and I was a little bit up in the woods, and I just stood still. And he shook off and sat there and groomed his fur, and off he went. And I had close to 40 or 50 photos of him before he left, and he never even knew I was there. So there's something to be said for quiet shutters, Mark. and with the herons, my lenses are all, I've got a 500 millimeter lens. I actually have two, and then I have a 600 millimeter lens. And with a teleconverter, you can boost that up, because I don't like getting near these herons at all. I don't, you know, because they're pretty fidgety.
Yeah, and you don't want to drive them off their nest and have nesting failure happen. And that's I want to mention that, enjoy what we're talking about at a distance.
True.
Bring binoculars, bring a scope if you have it, but don't get close to it and don't harass them. Now, the great thing about this book is it follows the herons through the year. When do herons start coming back to build their nests? It must depend upon where it is in the county or in the state.
Yeah. This heronry is probably, I'm going to say it's probably 5 or 6 miles south of the New Hampshire border in north central Massachusetts. And I usually start watching the birds in the 1st of March. And the first bird I saw in this heronry this year was the 16th of March. And there were two of them. And the next day I went in, there were five of them. And within a week, they had nests. They were back on the nests, and the males were coming back and forth with sticks and twigs and stuff. And this was today, the fourth, the third.
Yeah, third.
And now they're all setting. They're all sitting on nests now. There's nine nests this year.
Is one of the requirements the pond and where the nests occur has to be ice-free? In other words, they won't start returning to the nest until the ice is off the water?
No. This pond was a little more than half full of ice this morning, this year, and they were in there. In fact, I took a picture of one sitting up in a tree with a tremendous amount of snow all piled up on the the branches of the trees.
Now, I'm going to ask you a lot of questions that I'm sure the general public is interested in. Do they use the same nest year after year?
Yes, they do. If a nest blows down, they will come back to the same place, but they may not use the same spot. But they bond to their rookeries.
It seems to me this happened here in Westboro. We had a huge rookery at a place called Sewasco. It was a big pond. And occasionally a great horned owl would take over one of the nests early. But eventually all the dead trees that they left to nest in fell down. And I always think of these rookeries as temporary at best. They're not going to be there forever.
Well, this particular spot, there was a large heronry in a large pond, and it all blew down.
Oh, wow.
Over time. But mm-hmm. I think when it was going, it was 10 or 12. And my chiropractor friend told me, I was lamenting to him that the herons were all gone. And he said, well, because he lived in that area, he said, I know where they are. and he told me, and I hiked in, and sure enough, there were five nests in there. And in the last 4 years, they've gone from five up to nine nests. Last year there was 10 and they lost one. And this year there are nine active right now.
Now, so I always consider herons to have a special relationship with beavers, because beavers are initially creating the habitat that creates the trees that the herons like to nest in.
You are correct on that one. And I think in 1966, when they passed the law prohibiting trapping fur-bearing animals with leg holes and body-gripping tracks, that kind of gave the beavers a little more leniency, so to speak, to build their dams. And to, so they've expanded quite a bit. And the more ponds, you know, the more trees are going to die on the back of the ponds, and it's going to open up a lot more dead trees to herons.
And if you've never been to a heron rookery after the young have hatched and gotten to a certain age, it's really noisy.
Well, this this heronry I told you about up in Phillipson, it was at Queen Lake. It's no longer there. The one with the 52 nests in it. That's how I found it.
You could hear it.
I had a general description on where it was, and I could hear it, and I just followed the noise and got in there.
Wow.
So, yes, it's very noisy.
Well, it's interesting because once the young get to a certain age, they actually clack their bill a lot, and you'll hear bill clacking and all sorts of other noises. And, boy, once an adult returns with some fish in its gullet, holy smokes, does it get noisy.
Oh, yeah. I've got some pictures. I love seeing the looks on the face of the young ones when the adults come in with their gullet filled with fish. It's just with their punk hairdos. And
yeah.
The young ones.
They get wicked intense. I mean, they want that fish.
Oh, yeah. And I'm surprised that there aren't more herons flying around with their eyes put out. They put their head right down, and especially the nests that have three or four chicks in them.
Yeah.
They put their head right down in there, and all those bills, those sharp bills that are flying around.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My returning guest tonight, always a pleasure to talk to him, is nature photographer Dale Manette. And we're talking about his new book and collection of his photographs, Genius of the Swamp, The Great Blue Heron. One of the great things that I love about your photography is while you're sitting there watching the herons, so much other stuff is going on around that pond. And those photographs are also included in this book, too. We talked about beavers. Beavers are fascinating to watch.
They sure keep me occupied. But most of the time, if it's a nice day, they're in their lodges by, 7:30, 7:15 in the morning. But if it's a dark, cloudy day, sometimes I've seen them out as late as, 10:30, 11 o'clock in the morning. But not only beavers, otters.
And you got to love otters. Otters are amazing.
Oh, yeah. Muskrats, and then the ducks, wood ducks.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun. And people should take the time. And even if you only do it once, take some bug spray with you and some binoculars and find a beaver pond or a swamp and just go and just sit down and sit there for, an hour in the morning when the sun's coming up. You'd be amazed at what goes on.
Now, you have photographs in this book of other herons that are found in central Massachusetts, but they don't necessarily nest here. Now, green herons nest in central Mass, although they're not a common nester, but they're a solitary nester, and they really hide their nest. their nests are usually in like bushes and stuff like that. I never get a clear look at a green heron nest.
No, I've never found a green heron nest, but I know of three or four ponds that have lots of green herons in them. And I don't usually start seeing green herons until around the 1st of May.
Yeah.
The middle of May.
They're a late migrant. They don't come in to like the warblers do.
Yeah. Yeah. And then a couple years ago, I got a tip. There was a little blue heron hanging out in a pond up in Northfield, Massachusetts.
Yep.
That had a couple of great blue heron nests in the ponds. And boy, I tell you, Mark, I haven't seen a little blue heron since, you know, the 70s. And so I got in the car and I drove up, and it took me about 20 minutes to find it. And there it was. I've got a picture of that in the book also.
They're interesting. Most of the time they show up here in Central Mass. They show up as a post-breeding wanderer. So it's in like the middle of summer or a little bit later, and they're rare. So one might show up in all of Worcester County a year. They do breed on the coast, but we're probably getting wandering ones after they've nested. Now, you've also got great pictures of great egrets, which are stunning.
Those are other wandering.
Yeah, but you got a lot of pictures of those.
I enjoy taking pictures of green herons, egrets, but, you know, I hate to sound like a broken record, but it's patience. People come to my shows and, you know, they buy my books and everything, and they think they're wonderful pictures and they compliment it, but what they don't realize is how many thousands of hours.
That's right.
I've spent, how many times I've spent 4 or 5 hours in the morning, and I've come home with nothing but bug bites, or if I'm lucky, I'll get a tick dug into my leg.
Wow.
but you know, it's just incredible what you can see when you take the time to slow down.
Well, what's amazing is because you do that. And in this book, you've got some fantastic photographs of things like moose.
Yes.
Bobcats, coyotes, and black bears. Now, I'm still amazed that I'm seeing moose in Massachusetts. When I grew up, when I was a kid and into a teenager, moose never appeared here. And now they're breeding.
Yeah. I never saw a moose in Massachusetts until I started working at the Quabbin.
Yeah.
And a guy came in to the office and one day in late 80s and told me that he had seen a female moose with a young one.
Wow.
Up in the northeast part of the reservoir. So at that time, I was working as an assistant to the wildlife biologist, and I mentioned it to him. And he said, well, why don't you take a truck and go up there and, you know, see what you can find. So the next day I did, and about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I was in the same pond, and right about the same time, out of the woods comes this female moose with a young one. And when I was, I worked as a forester for 12 years at the Quabbin, and it was not uncommon for us in our travels during the day to run into three or four moose. I remember one day we ran into 7 of them all together. It looked like a herd of cows.
Wow. But they're a spectacular mammal. They're huge. They're not deer-sized. Yeah. They're enormous and long, long legs.
Yep. Yep. You don't want to hit one with your car.
No, you don't. We actually got hit by one. We didn't hit it. It hit us and spun our car out.
Yeah, the people that drive up and down Route 202 in New Salem and Pelham through here, you know, I travel that road all the time, and people go 60, 65
yeah,
miles an hour.
Don't do it.
Down. And, yeah, every now and then one of them will hit a moose, and it totals the car, and it almost totals them.
Talk to me about what great blue heron eat. Are they mostly eating things like sort of fish like hornpout?
Well, I know a small beaver pond that I go to that that's all I really see them pull out of there is pout. And they have a unique way of eating these pout, because if you're a fisherman, you know anything about these pout, they've got these fins that come out of the side of the head that are, they're bones, but they're really stiff, and they're about an inch and a half long on each side of their gills. And what they'll do is they'll catch the pout, and they'll shake it and shake it and shake it, and they'll throw it on the ground, and they'll spear it, and they'll pick it up, and they'll shake it, and they'll throw it on the ground again. if they catch it in the water, they'll either walk or they'll fly to, you know, a mud island or someplace where it's solid. And what they're doing is they're breaking it down, because every time I've seen them swallow a pout, it goes down head first.
Yeah, yeah.
So those fins have to be broken down, so they'll fold back, so it can get down their throat easier. But I've seen them in the river, Connecticut River. I've seen them catch what's the word I'm looking for? the bottom feeder.
Carp. I watched one try to down a huge carp at Great Meadows, and I had my class with me, and we watched it for about a half hour, and it had to like inch it down its throat. The fish was so big, but eventually, over time, it got the entire fish down there. But a carp is a big, heavy fish.
Yeah, I have a picture in the book of one with a carp, and he stabbed right through the top of it. But I've seen them get frogs. I've seen photographs of them down south in the Everglades, and of them with snakes.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've been told that they'll take small mammals. So I guess they'll take just about anything, but mainly they're fish eaters.
Now, I want to talk about black bears, because you seem to run into an awful lot of them.
Yeah, lots of them out here.
Is that your favorite mammal, or is it the moose?
Ah, it's the moose.
Well, it's the most spectacular. But I love bears. Bears just seem like drunken frat boys to me. They're just, I mean, they'll do stuff. They don't. Black bears, unlike grizzlies, they're omnivorous. They're eating anything. They're very smart. But they're just big and heavy, and so they could just basically do what they want. They just sort of wander around, and it's always startling because they're so black. Like, you've never seen an animal that black, not a crow. I mean, black bears look incredibly dark.
Another thing that amazes me about the bears is I've got quite a few trail cameras.
Yeah, yeah.
In the North Quavon area, and every one of those cameras has a bear box on it. And the bears will work and work and work and work to get those boxes off of the trees.
What? What, they're recognizing it's a camera and they don't want to get caught what they're doing?
I have no idea.
I've seen your trail cam shots, and like the bears just walk up to the camera. Like, yep. Jam their nose in.
Yep. I have a video of a bear that was working on the camera, and he sat down underneath it, and he leaned up against the tree, and it was almost like he was thinking about it. Then he stood up, and he turned around, and he put his paw on each side of the camera, and he threw his body back, and he pulled and pulled and pulled trying to get that camera off the tree.
Oh my God.
It's pretty hilarious to see, but I don't know what it is about the cameras. I mean, they're quiet. You can't hear them click. You know, I don't know if it's...
Have you ever had one of your cameras taken by a bear? Like, eventually it did get the camera?
No, But I did have a camera a couple years ago. I had a camera without a bear box on it, and the bear totally destroyed it.
Wow.
So that's if you're into trail cameras and you're in the northern Quabbin area and you're up in the woods, don't, especially if you have an expensive trail camera, boy, make sure you have a bear box.
They apparently don't like to be photographed, because it's really funny, because I've seen your other trail cam photographs and, you know, things are wandering through like you see in most, but bears just come right up to the camera.
Well, the moose will come up. The moose will come up to them too. The moose will come right up to them, and they'll breathe, and you can hear them. They'll snort on it and look at it, and they'll stand there for a while, and then they'll walk away. But the bears cut it in for trail cameras.
Okay, we're out of time, but before we go, where can people get this book?
In Worcester. It is being sold at the Tide Pool Bookstore.
Okay.
My webpage, www.northquabbinphotography.com.
Okay.
I've got lots of pictures there.
And you sell the book through there too.
They'll have to contact me. Yeah.
Okay.
There's a contact link there. They get a hold of me, and I've got them at the Quabbin Visitor Center.
Oh, great. Okay.
And they're in New Salem at the New Salem General Store. If you're down in the Lancaster area, they're sold at the Johnny Appleseed Visitor Center on Route 2.
Okay. Well, we got to sign off.
Okay.
My returning guest tonight has been nature photographer Dale Monette, and we've been talking about his new book and collection of his photographs, Genius of the Swamp, The Great Blue Heron, but an awful lot of information and an awful lot of other wildlife photography is crammed in this book. It's really an amazing book, and it's a beautiful book, too. Dale, it's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Well, thanks for having me, Mark, and hope to run into you pondside.
You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.